This self-taught artist has a show titled Spirit Songs opening this Friday at the Gala Center in San Luis Obispo. Coming right up. Hello, I am Stephen DeLuque, and you are listening to Ears on Art, an interview show specializing in the exploration and the enhancement of the visual arts. Ears on Art is produced by yours truly and co-host Krissa Hewitt at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio, serving the California Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Today's guest is Los Osos artist Jay Bonestell. Jay has a show opening this Friday at the Gala Center, located at 1060 Palm Street in San Luis Obispo. The show is titled Spirit Songs, so let's let Jay tell you about his history, his process, and his works.
Stephen and I are here in Los Osos at the home and studio of Jay Bonestell. Good afternoon.
Hello, nice to be here.
And Stephen?
Hello, everyone.
I'm not sure how long ago now it was, but we interviewed your wife, Anne, who is also an artist.
I believe that was 2014. So time goes so fast.
Okay, caught once again. Specifically for you, you have an exhibit that's up in San Luis Obispo, and this Friday will be Art After Dark, and you will be there for that opening?
Yes, that's our plan. I'm looking forward to it.
And I understand that it's up at the Gala Center.
That's correct. And it's a beautiful venue. It has wonderful lighting in there and these nice, cushy, soft sofas to sit on. And it's spacious.
Great, huh, Stephen?
Yes, I've actually had a couple shows up there. So
we'd love to start with finding out some of the story of how you got started with art.
Oh, boy, that's an interesting story. From earliest childhood, I used to love to draw and what they would call doodle in school. And that's actually extended into my adult life because one of the paintings that is on exhibit at Art After Dark was actually done while I was on the phone in a conversation that I really didn't want to have. And so I was working with one hand and the other hand holding the phone up to my ear. So I just managed to do it. It was just sort of doodling writ large with paints instead of with a pencil like when I was a kid when I was supposed to be studying or, you know, be in our textbook. I would just have scratch paper nearby and I'd be like drawing pictures of dinosaurs or illustrating whatever my fantasies were at the time. And so I've always kind of had a proclivity for drawing and then later painting. My mother did beautiful work and my father was an animator and a cartoonist. He actually had work published in some fairly mainstream magazines back in the day. This was during the 1950s. Mm. So it's sort of, I guess, heritable to some extent.
Are there siblings?
Yes, there is a brother and I have a sister that lives in Reno right now and they all had their own creative process. My sister does greeting cards. She does quite interesting work like that.
Huh. It's fun when things kind of are more than one person in the family and then you're not pointed out as much as, oh yeah, you're the creative one.
Unfortunately for me, I am the creative one.
You started to answer this, or maybe you did in full, but I'm often intrigued with doodles in terms of, did you find yourself often doing the same type of thing?
I think I did. I loved anything that swirled and twisted. What I mean by that is that one of my earliest impressions as a child was seeing an image of Van Gogh's famous painting, That Starry Night, and for whatever reason, it just grabbed me. And I always just loved it. And So I somehow, by osmosis, absorbed that and would doodle on paper, you know, with endless variations of that. In fact, there's a couple of my pictures that have a bit of influence from that, you'll see.
So the theme for this exhibit, is there one?
Well, the title, which came from my wife, which I'm very grateful that she coined a title called Spirit Songs. And so as a theme, I would say that it's representational art, but with a touch of mystical enchantment in them. You know, I have imaginative beings in them. It's not exactly visionary art. I wouldn't say anything like that. But the process is really, for me, kind of strange that I've never really done this before. And what that is that, like, I will sit down and begin a painting without any kind of idea or plan what the picture is going to end up as. And it just sort of happens, and it's very, very strange. And here I am at 68 years old. It's just happening, and I don't understand it, but whatever it is, it's fun. And it's sort of fun, like it was, again, like going in childhood, just spontaneously drawing a dinosaur or something strange. But anyway, a lot of the backdrops, as I say, they're representational from places that actually exist. I go walking with my dog all over, and I've gone hiking all my life. And so we did a trip to Ireland in 2002 and 2003, two trips, and we took photos from there. And some of the backgrounds and some of the pictures are from there, but the paintings are peopled with whoever comes out of my imagination. So.
There's a little one hanging on the wall just behind you. Is that the type of theme that you're describing?
Yes, it is. That happened to be called the Fae, and that was it's the fairy folk, you know, kind of cavorting and dancing about in the moonlight. And so I just love things like that. And again, that goes back to childhood. I just was totally intrigued by pictures like that. And then there was a work of old-time illustrators like Arthur Rackham, who did classic fairy tales. I've never been into anything like the dragons and castles or anything like that. I just kind of like more low-key, little nature-based things. Oh, also, this is all very disparate, very different, but I just love, you know, kind of hidden, quiet, secret places that nobody would really think of as being any kind of art-worthy inspiration. What I mean by that is that another artist that had a huge influence on me, not in my style, but just emotionally, was the work of Andrew Wyeth. He had this way of totally capturing the essence of like hard and lonely lives and these very kind of quiet, austere places in rural Pennsylvania and Maine. And again, just like the early work of Vincent van Gogh, I don't know why, but it just really grabbed me for some reason. There was one picture I'll always remember I saw. It was a picture he did in the 1940s called Winter Fields. And it was this a very spare-looking post-harvest farm field, and where there was a dead crow lying among the grasses in the middle. And I don't know why that is, but that picture was like sent chills through my body, and I thought it was just really awesome. And so there's just influences like that. And then another thing I have always loved was the work of Camille Corot, the French pre-impressionist picture. And I always loved the impressionists. And so I have kind of a wide spectrum of likes when it comes to art, like with music. I don't know if I could say I'm influenced by anybody. I just sort of do what I do. I've never had any formal training, and people may see that. But I've never been to any kind of art school. It's just something I've always done on my own. And one time somebody said, oh, you're like an outsider artist, and I didn't really know what that meant.
Do you, Stephen?
Usually people refer to outsider artists, they're basically self-taught. They haven't been through the curriculums at a university or an art school or things like that. And so you haven't been influenced by instructors. You've been able just to develop your own artwork through your own imagination.
So maybe not quite as much a slam as it might sound like, hey, you. In fact, it's probably to your benefit in many cases. So you might sit down and go through some of your photographs of travels, and something will hit you and say, I want to use this, and then figure out what goes with it. Or is it the theme of maybe people or animals or something that comes first and then find the backdrop?
It's sort of a blend of both. I'll kind of sift through my old pictures, some of my snapshots that I took at my pre-cell phone days, and then I will.
There is such a thing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've been at this a long time. And so I started that back in probably the 1970s, I had a nice little snapshot camera that turned out some nice images, and that was down in Ventura County, and that's when I first discovered fields of wildflowers, and there was what is now called Santa Monica Mountains Recreational Area, where that was when I first started seeing some beautiful nature places. I learned a great deal about the wildflowers. I purchased field guides and came to know the various flowers and trees and bushes, the different species of California's ecosystems, and the birds. And then at one point, I took a part-time job as a substitute teacher at an outdoor environmental school, Rancho El Choro, where I would take out little groups of kids and be an interpretive guide for them. And so that's about as close as I've come to any kind of professional work. Other than that, throughout most of my life, I was just working as a gardener and doing a lot of outdoor grunt work that most people didn't want to do. And so, and working for minimum wage and all that. So now life is good and things are quite different at this time. So I'm very grateful for that.
I mean, it would seem as though the gardening and working the land certainly opened up or just intensified your appreciation of the kinds of things that you could all of a sudden look out and see.
Yeah, probably so, because I was so constantly attuned to the vagaries of weather and, you know, the various feelings. It's just like today, I was out early on the dog walk and I started getting the first little glimmers of spring, even though it's still January. And so I've always had this kind of an intuition of the shift in the seasons and the colors and the sounds, you know, of certain birds that start vocalizing at certain times of year. And so all of this resonates with me so deeply. As I say, I kind of absorb this, and I suppose it comes out in what I like, what I do.
Makes sense to me.
Yes, and you said you're active in the wild bird activities here in the county?
Oh, that's the Winter Bird Festival. It's held every Martin Luther King weekend in Morro Bay. What I do there is more smaller work on found objects like slabs of eucalyptus bark and on old wood and on clam shells and some flat stones that I pick up from the beach. I'll do miniatures, and some of them are a little larger than that, but people tend to really enjoy them. And so for the Bird Festival, that's what we do.
You are listening to Ears on Art, produced at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Today's guest is artist Jay Bonestell, who has a show opening this Friday as part of Art After Dark.
I'm getting back to just how some of this imagery comes to be. I have always envied people who could sit down and start to generate an image, especially of people, other animals, and get a likeness going without something in front of them. And I'm gathering that that's a real comfort zone for you.
It pretty much is. As I say, it just kind of happens. It's a really strange phenomenon. I don't really know how to describe it or understand it, because throughout most of my adult life, I always had to have something like a model to work from, or a photo, as I was saying, and somewhat of a plan. I would sit down, you know, with more of the conventional representational nature art and think to myself, you know, this is what I want right now. But with the work in this exhibit, it's quite different. This is something I would sit down with, and some of the backdrops are not from real places. Some of them I just made up. I just started smearing paint on a canvas, and then it started happening, or a piece of wood. One of the paintings has an unusual background. We had our little grandnieces over one time and let them play with paints, and they made really a very gnarly mess. And they just began mixing all these colors together into this muddy, unattractive type of color. And then they had so much of it, I thought, oh, it's too bad to go to waste. So I used that as the basis, laid it in. I laid in this large canvas with that color well before the paint dried. And then the image just came to me later once that paint dried, and the one that I wanted to convey, the one I wanted to do. If visitors wonder about that, they can probably ask me which one it was. So that's a little strange story. Plus the one that was done during an unwelcome phone call as a doodle. Yeah. There's a few works there that are just done on old, like found wood. when I just might find something that most people would have trashed, I would just sand it and clean it off a little bit and work with it like that.
In that case, is the wood itself suggesting imagery?
There has been, yes. It'll have like an old knot in it or a crack. And this is especially true with some of my bird art. I did a painting of a big owl sitting on a fence post, and the wood was literally from a fence that was knocked down during a storm. So sometimes that's true, sometimes that happens. But a lot of them are done on canvas or panel.
And the medium?
My basic medium is acrylic. I try to use a good quality acrylic. When I first started out, I used something called Ceramicoat. It's good for doing the small items like shells and rocks because it's kind of flat. But now I try to get a higher quality, more viscous type of acrylic. And so that forms the basis. But then I branched out into more mixed media where I'll use oil pastels, colored pencil, and crayon sometimes. Oh, and glitter too, just simple glitter. So you'll probably notice some of that in a few of the pictures. So I would say most of them are mixed media, but acrylic is the substrate, is the main thing.
Because of the variety of the material, do you have to think much about an order of how things are put down?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have to put the acrylic first, and then I'll apply other things, especially in discovering oil pastel, the great effects you can get with that. My mother was a real adept artist at soft pastels, probably back in the 1920s and 30s, and she did some amazing work with that, and that's the first time I learned about pastel. And then my father would do it in some of his works. He was a sign painter as well, and so I've had some experience with these things, but with pure pastel, I do not do that. I don't think I've ever done a pure pastel picture. I used to produce during the 1970s and 80s, I had a series of nature pictures, of bird pictures, where it was watercolor, and then when the watercolor dried, or dry brush, and then I would put pastel and colored pencil over it. So I've always done a mixed media format like that, but the works in the show are all mixed media with acrylic as the foundational paint. But yes, I have to put down acrylic first in these works, and then whatever else works for them. So that's pretty much the process, you know, physically, in terms of actually applying the pigments and things like this.
And is the acrylic allowed to fully dry, or are you working into it wet, or combination of things?
Oh no, it has to dry first. Well, actually, sometimes when it's wet, I can get an effect by using the pointy stem or handle of an old paintbrush to create lines and streaks and scratches that will be good for grass or old twigs, things like this. So yes, I can work with wet paint for specific kinds of effects. I know with watercolor, what I always used to love with watercolor was to sprinkle salt into it. And that would create an awesome effect. I'm sure any watercolorist listening knows what I'm talking about.
I am going to bite, though, and I don't think Stephen was showing a great sense of knowledge about this either. So salt with the watercolor?
It creates this amazing dappled effect where the color, the pigment will congeal around the grains of salt. And so let's just say if you're doing rocks, if you're painting a picture where you're using boulders, you know, you sprinkle a little bit of that in, some puddled water, and it can really look realistic and pretty awesome. And then you would also take a wadded or folded tissue and then dab with that in the paint, in the watercolor. And you could use your fingernail or use the handle of a brush for scraping to bring off a desired effect. I haven't done watercolors for a long time. A few of them I did that became digitally reproduced as interpretive panels. There was one, I don't know if it still exists, but it was on Prado Road on the trail there past the sewage treatment plant. It was a interpretive panel showing a wetland and a pond with the different birds and wildlife, insects and fish and all this. Oh, I did an acrylic one that was used in the South County at a nature center. And then the last one was an acrylic used at that surf beach by Vandenberg Air Force Base. I haven't done watercolor in quite a while. I hope to do it again. I don't think I'll ever just totally abandon one thing. I have things that have meant something to me throughout my life. I kind of want to hold on to it and from time to time indulge in it. But right now it's mostly the acrylic mixed media work that I do. Trick was to use some kind, like crayon or some kind of waxy medium like crayon pastel or some oil pastel before you apply the watercolor. It'll resist the application of water, but it'll create an effect that you like.
How many pieces are there going to be at the show?
I think it was between 25 and 30. Show as much as I could. It's kind of frustrating not to let people see the things that I'm the most pleased with myself. And that's why Open Studios is so nice, because there's this huge feast of eye candy that people can come in and enjoy. And then I'm not saying like, oh, I wish that I had could show you this or that.
I noticed that some of the paintings have very, very interesting frames on them. They're almost like picture window type of frames. How did you come up with that?
Well, if you want to know the truth, those are not framed. Those are actually just on old cabinets. I just picked them up off the street. Somebody was just going to throw them away. And so it was probably from an old stereo component or some old cabinet, but they were the doors. I think there'll be maybe three or four in the show. I painted them gold. I painted the trim of it gold, but they were wooden doors of some kind of cabinet. So it looks like a frame.
So the images are actually painted onto the door itself.
That's correct, yes. Of course, I used gesso first. I had to sand it a little bit because there was probably still some old varnish on the wood. And so I just kind of roughed it up a little bit with sandpaper and then apply a good coat of gesso, and then I'm able to paint on it.
Any other processes or medium that are kind of in the future for you that you keep going, I want to do this sometime?
Well, I probably will continue doing what I'm doing because it's the most fun. It's the most thing that just comes right from the heart, and it's more spontaneous where I don't plan it. And so it's sort of like a calling, you know, like something that I have the most fun with. And by the way, speaking of fun, one thing I've always done, like at the exhibit, I think there's going to be some of those little dolls that I make out of wild-crafted things or just scraps of various items. And Anne calls them spirit dolls, but to me, they're just fun little whimsical, quirky things to do. I guess that's part, I got a lot of my father in me. He used to do kind of little silly, sometimes tacky stuff, but it's just fun to do. And I also did for many years make shakers, rattles, mostly people of all ages, and they were from dried sea kelp. It was a bulb that you find on the beaches during autumn and winter months. It's called macrocystis, or bull kelp. And they dry almost like wood. And I attach those to driftwood with corn or little bits of pebbles inside to make shakers with, and then paint them and decorate them with feathers and beads. And we've had craft fairs where I've sold a great deal of those because people just really like them. And it's just, again, it's one of those things that were just fun to do. Mm-hmm. There's nothing serious about it. It was just really, really a fun thing.
When you move back and forth between working three-dimensionally and two-dimensionally, are you finding that one has an impact on the other?
I think I just switch back and forth pretty easily. And I've done other things too, like make wands. We call them fairy wands with little crystals inserted into a stick decorated with feathers. And those children really like those. So I have, and then I've done a whole series of little figurines with clay, like the old Southwestern type animal fetishes, as well as these little goddess figures, modeled after some Neolithic figurines found, like people are familiar with that Venus of Willendorf. Again, those are fun items. And there's not going to be any of those at the show, but at our open studio, if anybody would like to see that, they're welcome to it. They're here in October, every October.
How many years have the two of you been doing open studio?
I think this might be somewhat like our 17th. I think we might have done it second or third from the first of them. In doing there, we didn't have a studio. We were just showing them in our home, which is really poorly lighted, and it was really, really a difficult thing, because when it comes to hanging, I don't have patience for it. And I don't like hammering nails in the wall. And thanks to Rhonda LeBrain and her husband, Larry LeBrain, and his other helper, Sandra Pendle, they've been so awesome and wonderful with helping do some of the footwork with things like this.
Oh,
and
that's
they've decorated, you know, they have eye for organizing. Because all I do is do the pictures. You know, I'm not really great at knowing how to make a setup or anything like that. I've never promoted myself at all. I've never, as I say, I'm not a professional of any kind. I've just sort of done what I've done just for either for the love of it or for the fun of it. And thanks to Anne, and thanks to people like Rhonda who have really kind of pushed me and encouraged me to get a public presence. I never thought I'd ever do anything like that. I just did it with no more thought, I suppose, than like a kid doodling a picture, a little picture. I don't know. It's kind of strange. That's why when someone said that it was an outsider artist, you know, I kind of looked it up, and that's usually referring to some eccentric old hermit or whatever, you know, or some strange character that, who was that man? Oh, Howard Finster. There was a man named Howard Finster who was this real religious fundamentalist somewhere in Appalachia, and he did all these pictures of angels and devils and people being raptured, and it was kind of a primitive form, but it was really totally trippy and just fun to listen to, and he eventually became famous. He really, and then there was that story of Henry Darger, who there was a documentary called In the Realms of the Unreal, who was, I think he might have suffered from autism of some kind, but he was totally withdrawn and had no interactions with other people and didn't know anything about the outside world. He just stayed in his apartment and did these murals illustrating his fantasies, alternative worlds with children as the heroes. It was strange. I guess I was wondering why people associate me with characters like that. But I don't know. It's only because of the encouragement and prodding of other people who encouraged me to kind of show things. Well, I just hope whoever comes enjoys it. You know, that's what I want to do. You know, I like to produce work that conveys a feeling. I think I did that in a little, not exactly a bio, but what do they call it? Like an artist statement. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is when I produce something is when you look at that, like, you know, how do you feel? Like, what does that make you feel? And you can interpret it any which way, because some of the titles are a little cryptic. They're just titles that came to me. And so, like, when people see these, you know, they wonder, like, you know, what is happening in that picture? Or what inspired you to do it? It's kind of hard to answer. The most important thing to do is if somebody sees it, what would you think? Or what do you feel when you see this?
So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been really fun and interesting. And so I hope everybody will enjoy the show, and I appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to Art After Dark.
Co-host Krista Hewitt and I would like to thank today's guest artist, Jay Bonestell. Jay has a show opening this Friday at the Gala Center, located at 1060 Palm Street, opposite the County Courthouse in San Luis Obispo. There will be an artist reception starting at 6 p.m. as part of Art After Dark. The phone number for Gala is 805-541-4252, and their website is galacc.org. This has been Ears on Art. My name is Stephen DeLuque. Thank you so much for listening.